Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Welcome in. It is Fantasy Baseball Today with Scott White on Twitter at CBS Scott White. I am Chris Welsh. You can find me on Twitter at Is It The Welsh. There is so much going on. We've got standouts from Thursday, two start pitchers, lots of news, a few emails. And today, it's just me and Scott White. Hello,
what?
Scott. I know.
What?
Adam ditched us.
Your babysitter's gone.
He is. I know. I don't know what to do. I'm kind of like, yeah. I'm like a dog when you opened up the door. And I'm like, ooh, do I go out the door? What do I do here? Do I stay?
You're going to be climbing up the shelves, pulling the bookcase down on you because no supervision. No adult supervision here.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time that any of that's happened either. So thank you to everybody that's tuning in here. And it'll be fun. It'll just be me and Scott. And I'm going to interject a few prospect things as I'm a prospect guy and Scott is obviously a great prospect guy. But let's jump right in. Favorite two start pitchers. We're looking at guys owned 70% or less in leagues. I'm going to throw this out, even though we've talked about him for a couple days this week. Avon Nova. Avon Nova's got two matchups that I don't hate, 38% own. He's at Minnesota. That could be better, but also against Texas. Scott, I know you guys are not big Avon Nova guys, but when you look at a list of the under 70% owned, there are a couple interesting prospects that maybe have a matchup or two that's less than likely. But what do you think? I know you don't like Nova, but Minnesota, Texas?
Well, Minnesota's terrible.
It's a bad matchup. I get that. But Nova has been better on the road. I think almost a run better on the road than at home.
Okay. I imagine. I mean, obviously, I can't predict exactly how that's going to go, but that seems like a bad matchup. And Texas, trying to look at how they've done recently, obviously their season stats look better because Joey Gallo was around for much of that time and he's not anymore. They haven't been doing so hot lately. So yeah, I mean, I'm on the fence whether that's a good matchup or a bad matchup, but the bottom line is I just don't believe in Nova at all. And like, I'm sure the moment I put him in my lineup is when it's all going to unravel for him. And the matchups aren't nearly favorable enough for me to roll the dice personally.
It makes sense. All right. So who do you got? Who's your favorite two start pitching matchup for this upcoming week?
All right. So using the standard of a 70% cutoff, there's really only one guy who I think is a, oh man, he's 71. He's 71.
I know. I didn't pick him because he was 71. Yeah.
I was going to say Brad Keller. Man, so it's not good.
I mean, I feel like we can give you a pass.
I didn't catch that one.
I was going to say, we could probably give you a pass for 71%, but if you want to stick true to it, I understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people should start Brad Keller. One of his matchups against Baltimore, he has been emerged as an innings eater, ground ball specialist. So it's, you know, even his bad starts are more like of the 4-run, 5-run variety than like 2 2/3, 6-runs, something like that. So yeah, I think he's a pretty safe option. Beyond him though, we have to go deeper. I kind of like Eliezer Hernandez, who's only 8% owned. So he's available everywhere. And he did just give up 4 home runs when he pitched yesterday. Those were the only 4 runs he gave up. He is a fly ball pitcher.
Matchups, but, you know, don't worry at all? I mean, Atlanta and Philly?
Philadelphia, yeah. I think it's one of those starts that I would only consider in like a points league as opposed to categories league. Hernandez being RP eligible. He's a pretty good swing and miss guy. And I don't know. I mean, it's obviously looking at a lot of bad choices here.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting what you said, too, because if you want to take it to like a head-to-head standpoint, under 70%, there's not a lot of great favorable matchups if you're trying to play head-to-head to start stuff. Points leagues are things you can get away with here.
Right, exactly. Like the thresh, there's usually, because I do two-start pitcher rankings every week for the website, and I kind of have a separate cutoff for, you know, traditional 5x5 category leagues and then points leagues, because the threshold for a decent start is much lower in a points league. Like, basically, if you're making two starts, as long as one of them isn't such a disaster that it gives you negative points, I mean, the guy still has hope of pulling out a good week, you know, a couple. Yeah, I mean, as long as there's not such a disaster that it's costing you points, it's pretty much a beneficial week for the pitcher if you use him. And I think there's a decent chance Hernandez provides you with that.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely hit back on just going through some of the two-start pitchers a little bit later in the show. How about some Thursday standouts? I've got two that kind of intersect each other. Yu Darvish was phenomenal. 7 innings, 4 hits, no earned runs, no walks, 10 strikeouts. Guess what? 0 walks in his last 4 starts, 90 strikeouts and only 7 walks in his last 12 starts. Beautimous. But it was all doomed because the lead was taken away, and ultimately Bryce Harper in that game had a walk-off grand slam, hit his 25th homer off of Derek Holland after Pedro Strop was taken out. So Bryce Harper with the big old grand slam. But Yu Darvish is just on an absolute incredible run. Do you think, I mean, he's at a spot where you're just not going to even think about matchups anymore, are you?
I think he's pretty much back to ace level. You gave 0 walks in his past 4 starts, right?
Yeah.
His past 12 starts, 0.9. is his BP, is his walks per nine, 0.9 in
only
12
seven.
Starts. Yu Darvish. And I mean, his ERA is actually kind of high during that stretch because of some home runs, 3.59 ERA in that 12 start stretch, but a 0.83 whip, 11.1 Ks per nine, obviously pitch it deep into games. He's pretty much back to pitching at an ace level. And honestly, it's validating for me because my stance, even through the awful months, was, you know, the underlying, there's some really interesting stuff going on here beneath the surface. And if he just get those walks under control, I think he can be great again. And, you know, that it's one of those points where it starts to sound, it's one of those takes where it starts to sound stupid to yourself the longer it's not coming through. But I'm glad it finally did. I'm not such an idiot after all.
No, I mean, and I was definitely buying in on Yu Darvish, and my league mate over at In This League, Scott Bogman, has always been just a Yu Darvish homer forever. And it's tough because Yu Darvish, he's been one of those guys you've had to stomach through. You've had to stomach through this, and it's a huge payoff. It actually, Yu Darvish reminds me right now of the pitcher version of Jose Ramirez, like the payoff that you're getting if you were able to stomach through the process. And it's nice to see Bryce Harper as well. Grand slam. He's been getting hot. But what about you, Scott? You got any Thursday standouts you want to give to the audience?
I just want to mention for Harper because, you know, there was a point early this season where it was a legitimate question whether or not he was even like a high-end outfielder anymore. And a lot of it had to do with an escalating strikeout rate. Well, the strikeout rate has come down quite a bit over the past couple months. It's still, you know, it's still one of the worst of his career, but it's certainly passable. I mean, it's like 25%. I think it's like 26% for the season now, which is really not that bad in the 2019 context. So that's encouraging to see. My standout for Thursday, I'm going to bring up Corey Seager here, because he homered for the third straight game. And I feel like everybody, like, I don't know what his start percentage actually is versus ownership percentage. I'm sure he's widely owned still. But everybody's kind of been keeping him around, not really knowing what's going to come next. Because I feel like the plate discipline's been great all year. He was getting hot right before going on the IL with that hamstring injury. But he just hasn't hit the ball with the same authority this year that we've seen from him in years past. Obviously, first year back from Tommy John surgery, I'm guessing that has something to do with it. But,
and to your point, 93% own, but only a 68% start rate.
There you go. There you go. I think I can definitely envision a scenario where he just takes off over the final 6 weeks and looks like Corey Seager of old again, and everybody's happy to have held on to him. Another, like you were saying with Jose Ramirez and Yu Darvish, where, you know, the wait was justified. One other standout, Ahmed Rosario, five hits, two doubles, a triple among them. And he looks like the leadoff hitter with Jeff McNeil out. I don't think Ahmed Rosario is a great offensive player, but there is some speed. There's a little bit of power. Not great on base skills, but when anybody who's batting at the top of the lineup, it obviously it increases the potential impact of that player. And I feel like Ahmed Rosario might end up being a pretty productive fantasy option while McNeil's out.
Yeah, he's always been a speed option. The power was in question. Ultimately, the bat was in question. And the funny thing about him was he was like the perfect testament to the age old, like, how do I balance prospect lists that are not based around fantasy and ones that are based around fantasy? Because Rosario is one of those guys that you would see ranked, you know, like 4 or 5 overall, but he was just more of a defensive player. And it's, you know, we're just looking for the ultimate payoff. And it's starting there. There's speed, and if he's leading off and he can make contact, he's going to be worthwhile. Injury news notes. Max Scherzer could return on Sunday. If he gets pushed also, he could be one of those two starts if they wanted to go that route. Very, very good to get Max Scherzer back. Joey Votto was scratched with back tightness. It's just brutal to talk about Joey Votto at all in this season. I haven't been around the whole season, obviously. What has been your take on Joey Votto as far as rosterability? Is it still something that is if he's not hitting well, you put him on the bench, or would you just, have you been comfortable cutting bait?
At this point, I mean, it's mid-August, and whatever glimmer of hope we've seen has been short-lived. I think it's time to cut bait, maybe permanently. I'm not, you know, after the way last year went, I was giving him a pass. He's Joey Votto. Obviously, he finished the year hot, but following it up with this year, a guy in his mid-30s, I think we may have seen the last of him as anything beyond like a deep league option.
Yeah, it kind of hurts. Javier Baez sat with an illness. It ended up moving David Bodie over to shortstop, and Ian Happ was able to get in. Ian Happ, interesting. We'll probably talk about him on here. And how about this one? The New York Yankees expect Giancarlo Stanton to return in September, according to MLB.com. Scott, sure. I'm sure he's going to return.
I mean, yeah, probably. He probably will, right?
I mean,
they want him ready for the playoffs.
I think they do, but do you think it's in time? It's going to be with enough time for anybody? I mean, I think Stanton to me has been one of the more difficult decisions. Obviously, if you have an IL, you just throw him on there. But there are people out there that are going to have problems. They're going to look and they're going to say, "Well, Stanton is in place of, you know, where I could make some moves, but he's so talented." He can stack up the stats at such an extreme level. He's one of those guys you don't want to cut. But ultimately, I question that he comes back. And
it's possible he doesn't come back. Will he come back with enough time to gain your trust? I'm sure people in 3 outfielder leagues who are, you know, those are usually head to head leagues. So you're talking about, you have to make every lineup you set count from this point forward, because one bad week could ruin everything for you. So will he have enough time to gain people's trust in that format? I mean, they all probably have pretty good outfielders as it is, if they're in contention. And I don't know. I do think there's a pretty big distinction between 3 outfielder leagues and 5 outfielder leagues in terms of how much you hope Stanton can do for you down the stretch. Because a 5 outfielder league, I imagine there's a lot of people who would plug him in almost immediately.
Yeah.
You extend the need for outfielders out that far. It makes a pretty big difference.
Yeah. Robbie Ray hit the IL with back spasms. And we talked about this yesterday, and my call ended up being right. John Duplantier is going to be called up. Looks like he's going to be taking that spot. Got a 4.38 ERA in 25 major league innings this year, and a 9-24 walk to strikeout ratio. So Duplantier, is that somebody that, he kind of falls in line with a lot of these other guys we've been talking about earlier in the week, maybe the Dylan Peters, the Cal Quantrills. I mean, is Duplantier a person that you would potentially want to get out there streaming, maybe only matchups?
Well, that's interesting. When is he going to make his first start? Because I think Robbie Ray's turn was due up for for two starts this upcoming week.
You are right about that. I'm going to guess the first one is going to be at home against Colorado. I haven't seen any official announcement outside of Duplantier is going to be the one that's getting called up. So I'm assuming he's going to be slotted into Robbie Ray's spot, which I have on here on CBS, August 19th at home against Colorado.
That being a Monday. And then the second would be against
the Milwaukee Brewers,
which isn't good. I mean, I'm interested. Fresh back, you know, fresh up from the minors, where I don't think he had more than a four inning start in a couple months because of the injury he was dealing with. You know, I'm not that hopeful from an impact. I like him as a talent. I just think it becomes another matter of how much time will it take for him to earn your trust. And like, is he going to come up and throw six innings right away? I doubt it. And it's hard for any starting pitcher to make an impact in fantasy if he's not doing that. So it's more of a keep an eye on it situation, I think, than a rush out and add him situation.
Yeah, I agree with that. Unless you were in deeper leagues or, you know, again, points leagues, things like that, where you might want to do it. He's more of a watcher here. Dodgers pitcher Justin May's role is not necessarily guaranteed. They're also talking about him potentially going in the bullpen, but Roberts is kind of wishy-washy on where that stands, which that's a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, I assume Kenta Maeda is headed toward his annual August demotion to the bullpen, right?
Yeah.
So they need it. I mean, they have Tony Gonsolin hanging out at AAA. He had a good spot start the last time we saw him.
But the Dodgers at this point should just take all of their pitchers and just go through a opener at this point. Just three innings here, four innings for the other guy. Just control them in that fashion. I mean, they could really put out some crazy lineups if you think about it with Urias like and May and Gonsolin.
Like a piggybacking scenario?
Yeah, exactly. Like almost take four pitchers to create two, you know, eight-inning stretched pitchers where May and Urias and then Gonsolin and, I don't know, they got a guy in the minors right now, Mitchell White, who's pretty interesting. I mean, they just have a lot of guys out there that they could ring out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Gerrit Cole should be able to pitch next week. That's positive news for everybody. Now, how convenient was this that Adam just wasn't on the show that the New York Yankees got absolutely shellacked 19-5. The Indians beat up on the Yankees. Here's a few things. We had a double dong from Carlos Santana. Jose Ramirez, we talked about, also double dong. Perez, Greg Allen, a couple Yankees got in the action. Chad Green didn't make it out of the first inning. I believe he gave up five. It's obviously just happenstance here, Scott, that Adam wasn't here for this show, right?
Yeah, no, that's such an Azer move.
Agreed. And Jose Ramirez, just for whatever reason, ever since I've been, you know, coming on with you guys, Jose Ramirez has just been on an absolute tear. And I mean, we've already kind of talked about it, but he's the gift that's going to keep on giving for fantasy owners that have been able to pull through. And it interestingly makes that question we had earlier in the week of Jose Altuve versus Ramirez, just as we go, it's becoming more fun.
It is. Yeah. I mean, Jose Ramirez has been the strangest player to analyze, possibly in the entire time I've been doing this.
Really?
Which is over a decade. I don't know. That's probably an overstatement. But it's weird to think about a decade of fantasy analysis, too, because it's so much more sophisticated now than it was in those early years. May not even recognized how weird certain performances were in those early years. But yeah, it's been really weird for Jose Ramirez. Yeah,
he has, but he's been on a nice little tear. Obviously, we'll be looking at most added, most viewed guys. There's a couple that are interesting here. Steven Matz was near the top of the list, 69% owned. On Wednesday, he went six, struck out five, got a 4.33 ERA, 7-7 record, and two or fewer earned runs in four of his last five starts. I mean, is there easy competition? Those four good starts were San Francisco, a complete game against Pittsburgh, Miami, and then Atlanta. I mean, a lot of people are out there viewing Steven Matz right now, Scott.
And he is a two-star pitcher, and he would probably be You know, he's right there around Eliezer Hernandez and how willing I am to give him a chance. Probably just a points league scenario. There's a 60% difference in ownership there. Mats is 68% owned. The thing about Mats is there are a lot of ups and downs. In the end, the numbers tend to look pretty good, but in a way that I don't really buy into that much. It's kind of like a Julio Teheran situation where I'm not sure the skill level really backs up the numbers, and yet the numbers tend to be decent, and that's happening again this year. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want him other than like a spot start, you know, stream the two-star pitcher situation, but he's, you know, he seems like an okay choice.
He's right a now. Monitor. The number one guy that I saw viewed when I was taking a look earlier was Josh Rojas, who we've been talking yep. about with the Arizona Diamondbacks. He started 3 of the 4 games since being called up. He did sit versus a lefty. 6 games next week. He's got a home against Colorado and Milwaukee. And as it's scheduled right now, probably only one lefty in there, if that's what the Diamondbacks are doing, if they're sitting him versus lefties. He also is in the lineup on Thursday, doesn't have a hit, where he's been pretty solid there, but he was hitting 2 in between Dyson and Escobar, which is pretty fun. I feel like Rojas is, how the Diamondbacks are using him in this short term, I don't think it's all about David Peralta in the injury. I think it's really to get like a really big, solid look at him. But he is in right field tonight. Rojas continuously is a player that I'm comfortable trying to plug in down the stretch where needed, of course. Do you agree, Scott?
Yeah, it's pretty. Like, I think the fact that they're batting him second shows how excited they are about him, how they seem to feel like there's a lot of legitimacy to what he was doing at AAA. And my favorite stat right now, he's up to 12 plate appearances. And you know how many strikeouts he has?
Ooh.
I'm going to do the Doctor Strange thing. Hold up just one finger.
Uno, ma.
That's all
uno.
It is.
That's it?
One.
Only one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think he walked more than he struck out in the minors this year between AA and both stints of AAA with the Astros and the Diamondbacks. So, I mean, he already proved himself to be a very patient hitter, doesn't strike out a lot, and he was a counting stat monster. I mean, I don't know and have a hard time believing what he's been doing at AAA is going to translate at the major league level, but he right. sure does have all the little checkpoints you're looking for those type of breakout players. And I've heard Jeff McNeil is a comp of like production that you might see, but maybe even a better hitter, Scott.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, if what he was doing at AAA translates, I mean, he's, you know, top 5 bat in fantasy. So it doesn't need to, it just needs to be like, 60% of that, and he's a pretty valuable option.
That's right. That was the number I was thinking of as well. All right, let's hit a break real quick. We come back. We've got in-game, some in-progress games we want to take a look at. There's a whole bunch of ad information that we got to hit to. More pitchers, hitters, plus there are some emails out there. So taking a little break right here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right. Let's take a look, Scott, at a few just real quick before we get into all these. We got some in games going on as we're recording this. What is it, like 11:30 Eastern as we're going? We've got the Diamondbacks and Giants going, Astros and A's, and Angels and White Sox. It looks like there's a half-decent matchup going on with the Angels and White Sox. Andrew Heaney, I think, was going no-hit for the first 3 innings. At this moment, 5 innings, 5 strikeouts, 2 earned runs. where Ronaldo Lopez has struck out five and 5 1/3 with two earned runs. Both of those guys look like the, kind of those, you know, solid fringy options, and they're playing pretty well against each other.
I like Andrew Heaney a lot. I feel like we haven't seen the best from him yet. Last year, he came pretty close. And, you know, obviously he's dealt with a ton of injuries in his career. This year he's been doing a lot of the right things when he's been healthy in terms of missing bats. Even tonight, 14 swinging strikes on only 68 pitches. I mean, that's an incredible rate. But he's gotten burned by the long ball so much beyond a point that I think is reasonable to, you know, he's a fly ball pitcher. I get it. It's a homer friendly environment, but it, you know, it's been kind of ridiculous how many home runs he's given up. Especially early on when he was healthy, when he was at his healthiest. So, yeah, I mean, 3 2/3 innings in his first start back from the IL last time out. He's already up to 5 now. Considering he's at 68 pitches, it'll be interesting to see how deep he ends up going. If it's like, you know, if he goes 6-7 innings, he probably becomes an interesting two-start pitcher for next week. If you can trust him to go deep into games again. He's only 51% owned at Texas, at Houston. That's not great. But skills-wise, I think he's better than any of the other pitchers we've been talking about as potential two-star choices.
And it looks like you got Fires and Aaron Sanchez going up against each other. And looks like this might need to update because it's showing me that Fires has given up 4 earned runs, but the board hasn't updated. I think that's there you go. There, something just happened. Someone just hit Michael Brantley just hit a homer. So vintage Astros. Yeah.
Is Fires getting pounded finally?
He's 5 1/3, 4 earned runs, 1 walk, only 2 strikeouts.
No quality start today, Mikey.
Bye-bye. And Aaron Sanchez, 4 earned as well, 3 strikeouts. So no quality starts. A lot of homers, though. Matt Olson, Alex Bregman, Michael Brantley, Carlos Correa. Just a little in-game progress look. Are you a Judd Apatow fan?
I'm neutral on Judd Apatow.
Well, this is 40, but it's Cody Bellinger's. This is 40. That was my setup there. I wasn't sure if we would get there. But Cody Bellinger hit his 40th home run, 4 RBIs, and 5 stolen bases away from setting career highs in all of the standard 5x5 categories. And it's mid-August. I mean, I don't need to be the one to tell you the year Bellinger's been having, but he was the first one to hit 40. And he's, like I said, he's one good game away from getting that RBI total. Stolen bases, he got a little bit to go, but Cody Bellinger, an absolute beast. And Pete Alonso hit his 39th homer post-All-Star break entering Thursday, though he was 181 with 40 strikeouts and 19 walks. He had a couple doubles in there, and he had 8 homers. So Pete Alonso and Cody Bellinger, a combined 79 homers between the two, Scott.
Looks like Trout's the second to 40 here in the late
Oh,
games.
You're right. You know what? You're right. Trout hit it right after he joined the club. What a group. What a group. I think Cody Bellinger, by the way, is not the de facto number 4 people have to look in fantasy next year, especially because league formats will dictate stuff where Scherzer is. But like, the top 3 is some combination of Yelich, Acuna, and Trout for the most part. Again, I want to point out, like, in points league, Scherzer might be in there. Do you at least say that Bellinger is in that top 5?
Well, no, that's... I've been saying for weeks that it's going to be Trout, Yelich, Bellinger. So I was putting him ahead of Acuna.
Over Acuna.
Obviously, Acuna's closed the gap during that time. And maybe I should be giving him more... more consideration, considering he's looking like the most reliable steal source of that group. Now that he looks like a fixture in the leadoff spot now, Brian Snitker. I'm not going to use the exact word he used, but he called himself an idiot for not batting Acuna leadoff. I think he's a little hard on himself.
That's a little weird.
There are some valid arguments to make for not batting Acuna leadoff, but the point is, it sounds like he's not going to mess with that anymore. And just based on the tendencies Acuna's shown, he runs a lot more from the leadoff spot. So that does look like a contribution we can count on from him going forward. And yeah, that's going to be something to consider. What's interesting for Bellinger is his batting averages, the month-by-month breakdown of his batting average, it doesn't look so good for him lately, and yet the strikeout rate is still way down. I'm not sure I'm totally buying that. I think Bellinger could have just such a crazy September that that he puts that debate to rest and is pretty clearly the number three option next year. But we'll see.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting thing will be how there might not be a consensus at the top for most people like there have been for so many, many years. We kind of talked about this, but oh, brother, that was the title. Corey Seager, he had homered in three straight games, as we talked about. And Kyle Seager got in the action. And 2-for-5 with a double, 3 RBIs, a run, and a K at Detroit. We've had a lot of good brother action is been the big key. He had 3-homer game on Tuesday and a 9-game hitting streak. Kyle Tucker is, I think, somebody. Yeah, I've got him in this hitter list here. So let's talk about the most added players, and we can talk about him there. The two most added hitters that I saw, Scott, were, probably no surprise, Aristides Aquino, who is up to 88%, up from 15% owned. Just everybody going massive on him. And Aristides Aquino is more owned than Mike Tauchman, who is 72%, who is up from 36%. So, I mean, that is a massive line from Aquino.
It's been fun, this group of hitters that have suddenly emerged as very attractive options in fantasy all at the same time. It's not just those two, but J.D. Davis, his ownership's gone up 34% in the past week. Gio Urshela, of course, 31%. It's amazing to think it was that short, that recently, that he was only 55% owned. And I think it's great to see that Aquino can go from 15 to 88 in mid-August. Like, I wasn't even sure that many people were caring about fantasy baseball anymore for his ownership percentage to rise that much.
See, this is one of those where, like, if I was a little bit more concerned with Giancarlo Stanton, like, you know, if let's say I had no IL spots and I had needed the roster spot, dropping a guy like Stanton for Aquino would be, I think that would be tough, but I don't long-term believe in Aquino. So that's the big thing. He was hitless tonight. He had a walk. I think it cools down. I love seeing it. I mean, I probably believe actually in Mike Tauchman more than I do Aquino. And if I had to choose between the two, that's the guy I'd want to be out there starting outside of this nice little hot streak that's going on.
Yeah, I'm not sure who of those two I believe in more. I think Tauchman has a more well-rounded skill set, while Aquino's, I keep calling him Aquino.
Like, it kind of looks like it. Yeah, I mean, his name is real. Aristides Aquino. Like, we get it, man. It's tough.
Yeah. Aquino is pretty much just all power. And that's a difficult profile to really have play up in this environment, just because home runs are so easy to come by. But the guy who I think is people may still be sleeping on of this group is J.D. Davis. Like, his production, I think, is the most, maybe even compared to like Urshela, who I think is great.
I think Davis
is the most sustainable, I feel like.
I think you're right. That's our better ads section. J.D. Davis up to 60%, and he's up from 26%. And I believe he's on a 9-game hitting streak where he's hitting .448 in that period, which is just unbelievable. Willie Calhoun, by the way, just adding a couple more better ads, and if we can get some more takes from you on J.D. Davis. Willie Calhoun, 58% up from 51, and Ryan McMahon, 62% up from 59. I put the three of these guys together because their percentage is relatively around the same. J.D. Davis was obviously much more picked up than the three, but Willie Calhoun did hit a homer, his 11th on Thursday night. Is this J.D. Davis as a big runaway if you were deciding between Calhoun, McMahon, and J.D.?
Yes. Yes. J.D. is a big runaway. I mean, the season numbers look great. And then when you consider his expected batting averages and his XBA, the actual stat, and his expected WOBA are both higher than what they actually are. I mean, good grief. This guy looks like a natural hitter. Calhoun's interesting, though. I mean, I think he's been undervalued for a while now, too, getting everyday at bats more than Hunter Pence, more than Shin-Soo Choo. And the Rangers play 8 games this upcoming week. They're my team with the number one in the hitting matchups, the Rangers. So Calhoun, at least for week 22, is what we're going into. Definitely somebody to consider putting in your lineup.
Yeah, and Willie Calhoun went 2-for-4 on Thursday night. He's had hits in three of his last four games, and I believe this is his second homer in the last four games. So Willie Calhoun has been pretty fun. Do you think, if I were to say, is this an accurate statement, I guess, J.D. Davis under-owned, Aristides Aquino over-owned? You think they should be flipped in percentages, like 60 should be Aquino and J.D. should be up in the 88s?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in terms of how much I believe in them, I believe in J.D. Davis more than Aquino. You know, if you're talking, should Aquino be 88% owned? I think that's yes. I mean, whenever somebody makes this kind of impact, like, you have to take a flyer on it just to see what happens next. You know,
but I've maybe not
wrong.
At the expense
I've been
of
wrong
JD.
Enough in my life to know to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of how much I believe in them, J.D. Davis should be. Yeah. J.D. Davis should be higher.
All right. Here's some deeper league hitters, deeper ish, about 35% or less owned. Luis Arias, not Urias. Remember, we're getting that right. 24% up from 17. Ian Happ is at 33%. He's up from only 14% the previous week. Kyle Seager, 31% up from 26%. And Jason Kipnis up to 35%. You have a look on your face like Ian Happ's percentage is much higher than what I just said.
Okay, I was making sure I had the right guy again when you talked about Arias. We're talking about
Arias, Luis, yeah, Arias from
who
Minnesota.
Plays for the Twins. Yeah. He does not play for the Padres. No.
And I love looking at their names too because it's just so ridiculously different. But as soon as our mouths open, it just sounds like the same player. So Arias, yeah. Happ, Seager, Kipnis, all between 24% and 35% owned in deeper leagues. Who's the guy that you take the flyer on out of these four?
Kipnis.
It's easy. Oh, yeah. Joe Kipnis, right?
Joe Kipnis. Yeah. Now, Jason Kipnis, who has been a different player since how far back is it going now? I think June, right?
That sounds about right.
To, yeah, mid-June. So, like, that's like, yeah, it's not quite half the season today. But anyway, yeah. 48 games now entering tonight. So the numbers are even better now with another home run. 307 batting average, 9 home runs, 898 OPS. I mean, if that's his season line, no, everybody has him in their starting lineup. And, you know, a 322 BABIP during that stretch. So it's not like he's having this crazy good luck or anything. I think he's fixed. You know, it wasn't too long ago we considered him a stud. And,
what about Arias? Arias hit his third homer. He's not known as... He really reminds me, anybody out there that's listening, I know there's a bunch of you guys that are still prospect people. If you look at a guy like Luis Garcia with the Washington Nationals, who's like, you know, supposed high hit tool, but he just doesn't loft the ball at all. He gets the ball on the ground a whole lot. This is who, like, Luis Arias was. He's just a big singles contact hitter, not a lot of power, but he did hit his third homer. I mean...
Yeah.
Over Happ and Seager, would you take the flyer on Arias over those two? Or does the percentages mirror probably where people should be, where Arias should be behind Happ and Seager?
I might take a flyer on Happ over him because I feel like the impact with his power potential is greater. But like Arias is a safer bet to be a contributor on some level. Part of the problem with Arias is he's not quite playing every day. He's starting like 3 out of 4 with Jonathan Scope still factoring in there. But I like a guy that makes a lot of contact, particularly because I feel like power is such an easy skill to cultivate at the major league level right now. Like you're so far ahead of the game if you're able to make contact at a high rate. And I'm not saying I think Arias... Yeah, there's a great chance he becomes a 20 homer guy, but Tommy La Stella did this year, you know, like it could happen.
Good things happen when you make good contact. That's, I think, the big key there. And Luis Arias is one of those players. How about some deeper league pitchers, deeper-ish league pitchers? It's not quite the Azer qualification here, but three guys when we were looking at the ads. Dylan Peters is up to 29% owned, up from 4. He was only 4% last week. Joe Ross, 33, up from 9. And Cal Quantrill, 45, up from 26. How would you rank these three as far as your interest?
It's pretty low for all three. I might go Peters, Quantrill, and Ross.
Okay, but you're not really interested. These aren't guys that you're taking the Flyers on.
No, Peters and Ross are both two-star pitchers for this upcoming week, but I have them under. I have them ranked under the header "No thanks." So even with a two-star week, I mean, they just have so much to prove. And even though they've pitched well recently, not in a way that leads me to believe there are some new skills they're tapping into.
Okay. Bullpen. Mark Melancon, 43% up from 4. I believe he was in the top 5 of most added. Emilio Pagan, 59 up from 42. And Archie Bradley, 49 up from 39. Pagan kind of solidified himself the other day where Alvarado struggled. Archie Bradley struggled with a blown save, and Atlanta is Atlanta. So you're obviously fishing for saves here. Rank your bait here. How do you fish if you're fishing for saves on these three? Who goes on the hook first?
Gone. And I don't think it's still, I don't think it's totally decided whether or not he's just the closer now for Tampa Bay. But I mean, he looks like the sort of overpowering reliever who could just, you know, be great in that role.
Looks like Alvarado, like what Alvarado was supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like 12 K per 9 and whip below 1. All of it looks great. And then I probably go Melancon over Bradley. I don't know how confident I am in either to really hold down the job. But Atlanta, I think, is a better situation to be, you know, in a better situation to pick up a high number of saves than Arizona is. So I would go Melancon over Bradley.
Yeah, and I agree with that one, too. I think that's astute there because, you know, Lovello has not been locked to Archie Bradley as a closer. They just like to keep him back in those roles. Yoan Lopez, to me, is still a future closer for the Diamondbacks. He's got the swagger, the attitude, been around the, you know, in the backfields and the clubhouse, that type of stuff. Hirano is not someone they want to put in that role. I think Archie is not locked for this for the rest of the year, where ironically Melancon may be one of those guys. Now, I added this one. This was a me one because I wanted to talk a little prospects here. And if you've got any others, please throw them in here. But I went and I dug through on the ad sheet and I went and looked at prospects who had not been up at the major league level, who people were trying to add, the preliminary ads here. And the three guys that showed up were no surprise, especially I think it's 100% Scott White influenced here, especially with the third guy. Jesus Luzardo up to 53% own. Gavin Lux, 37% own. That doesn't need, I mean, anybody is going to be on those guys. But Ty France, 4%. Those were the big percentage ads this week here. Where are you at on these guys, and do you have any other preliminary prospects you might want to pick up coming into week 22, just in case?
So I write a prospects report weekly on CBSSports.com. I just wrote it last night for this week, and basically the way it breaks down is I have 5 on the verge and I have 5 on the periphery. 5 on the verge are the 5 who I think are most worth stashing in redraft leagues. Not strictly just because of how close they are, but also, you know, what kind of impact I think they could make. And then the periphery are just guys who I want to talk about for whatever reason. So Luzardo and Gavin Lux are both in the 5 on the verge. They're both in the 5 you need to stash. And I know there have been some Dodgers beat writers who've kind of been pouring cold water on the idea that Lux could get called up. You know, there was a report that he might be with the team in September, but just kind of like to go along for the ride, not actually to be on the active roster and play. But and that's the part of the report that got aggregated everywhere. But if you read the full report, they're not ruling out him being on the active roster too. Like I still think it's a perfectly reasonable scenario that he could come up in September and become the primary second baseman, Muncy playing a lot of first, Bellinger playing a lot of outfield, especially with Alex Verdugo dealing with an oblique injury. Like, it's not like they would have to bench Jock Peterson in that scenario, you know? So yeah, I'm still very much on board with the idea of stashing Gavin Lux, who of course is hitting like .430 with a .1300 OPS at AAA. Just completely absurd.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Luzardo, I think he's going to have a rotation spot for the A's in September. He's made enough progress in his recovery from his latest injury, a lat strain. He's actually making his first AAA rehab start today. I'm not sure how that went or if it's still ongoing. But his previous rehab start, 7 strikeouts and 3 hitless innings. I mean, he looks like he's well on his way to making it back. So everybody needs pitching. I think you got to stash him. France is one who's not in my 5 to stash, but he would probably be like number 6 or 7.
So people need to go read the article. They need to be, they're off. They need to go and look at your article and they need to get on it. Get those right ads. I'd also throw AJ Puck in there, by the way, as well. AJ Puck is also in Vegas, I believe it is, AAA. And the thought process kind of mirrors Jesus Luzardo, that AJ Puck is going to be given an opportunity. Though, if I had to choose, Puck might be put more in a relief role. Just monitor AJ Puck. You don't need to go roll on him.
Yeah, that's what I've seen, and he'd probably come back in a relief role. But, he was the A's pitcher everybody was excited about last spring and then needed Tommy John surgery. So, yeah, he's definitely a name to keep in mind. If not for this year, then for, future years.
Exactly. All right, let's hit a break. When we come back, we've got more. We'll try to see if we can get to some emails. We got a whole bunch more, so don't go anywhere more. Fantasy Baseball Today, right next.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
So a little in-game look here, Scott. It's not getting better for Fires because it is we're top of the 7th, Astros 5, A's 6. So Fires are still, they're still giving up runs over there. Heaney does look like he has got a little bit more of a cushion, and he's in line. Heaney is 5 1/3 currently, 6 strikeouts, 2 earned. It is the bottom of the 6. No, actually, you know what? Quality start, now that it updated for me. Quality start for Andrew Heaney with those 6 strikeouts, and it looks like he's in line for the win as they're up 5-2 if they can hold. So Andrew Heaney continues. That's good news.
Maybe you need to pick him up for a 2-start week.
Someone to look at. The rotation, we already talked about Yu Darvish. Walker Buehler had a less than beautiful start. 4 innings, 5 hits, 5 earned runs, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts at Miami. Was rolling, 10-3 record, 3.31 ERA, 26 walks to 166 strikeouts and 141 1/3. But hit up a little bit in Miami, Scott.
Yeah, surprising time for that to happen. I get really tired of talking about these great pitchers having bad starts because it's just like, what are you going to do about it? You know?
Sure.
They're probably going to be fine.
Yeah, you can't really play matchups with these guys. Well, here's a fine pitcher who had a great outing, Sonny Gray. He went 5, gave up 1 hit, walked 3, but struck out 10 against St. Louis. He's got an 8-6 record, and he went under 3 on his ERA. It's got a 2.98 ERA, 50 walks, 154 strikeouts, and 132 innings. In his last 3 starts, 18 innings pitched, 7 hits, 0 runs, 11 walks, and 24 strikeouts against the Cubs, the Nationals, and the Cardinals. And guess what? He's got the Padres next week. Mm. Love it, right?
Sonny Gray, I mean, like, I tweeted this out, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. Like, what must the experience of owning Sonny Gray in a dynasty league be like? Has anybody in a dynasty league stuck with him through all the ups and downs, because like there's been nobody over the last 5 years who goes from looking like a Cy Young contender to like totally droppable as many times as Sonny Gray has.
That's really funny too, because I know he's kind of befriended Eno Saris, if people follow him, because Sonny's kind of latched on to a lot of like other analytical stuff. Maybe, you know, a portion of it, you ever want to get good stuff there. But I totally agree with you. Like, Sonny Gray is one of those dynasty guys where you're like, yeah, I owned Sonny Gray 4 years ago. Too bad he's doing good now. Like, no one actually even owns Sonny Gray anymore in Keeper of Dynasty. He's a myth. Caleb Smith, who is 93% owned, but only 48% starting, went 5, struck out 4, gave up 1 earned run against the Dodgers, went 106 pitches, currently up to 131 strikeouts in 111 innings. His previous 2 starts, he went 5, struck out 4 against Tampa, and went 4 2/3, but gave up 6 against Atlanta, and he's got Atlanta again next week. So monitor the Caleb Smith. And Marcus Stroman, 5 1/3, gave up 3 runs, but 2 earned, walked 4, 5 strikeouts, and had 2 homers allowed against Atlanta. Currently, he's got a 7-11 record, a 3.3 ERA, and Marcus Stroman, that's another one of those that I still have a hard time wrapping my brain around.
Yeah, I thought we'd get more immediate returns from him joining up with the Mets. His win-loss record was so bad with the Blue Jays. Obviously not at all his fault, and it really held back his fantasy value, but it's been 3 shaky starts in a row with the Mets. So,
did you see Callaway's comments too, by the way, today?
I didn't.
Just another thing where they were talking about analytics and, you know, what role, and he said, we probably do stuff about 85% against what analytics do. That's just what we do. It was just another one of those complete and utter anti-analytical arguments where sometimes you want to be like, all right, so I know you say this is your way, but do you also see that your way hasn't been working? So why are you digging your heels in?
It's weird because he got such a good reputation, I think deservedly, with the Indians as their pitching coach. And, you know, some of the changes he made seemed analytically driven. Like the biggest one I point to is he got Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer throwing their breaking balls a lot more, and both saw a surge in production. I think that was, did Corey Kluber end up winning the Cy Young that year, or he was at least...
I want to say that he did. That sounds right.
Has he won 2 Cy Young awards?
That sounds right. Let's see. We'll see who
gets
there first.
Yeah. So the second Cy Young award, that was that season where it took him back from being just another ace to, you know, one of the preeminent aces. And that was also the second half when Trevor Bauer's production shot up. So, like, I mean, he did some great things as the Indians pitching coach in a way that seemed a lot smarter than he tends to sound when he talks. So, I don't know.
Doesn't sound too smart when he talks.
Yeah,
not at all. Julio Teheran got lit up, 1 1/3, 8 hits, 6 earned runs, 3 walks, and 2 strikeouts against those Mets, by the way. 7-8 record, 3.71 ERA. He's got Miami next week, 4 starts versus Miami. He's got a 2-0 record, 0.36 ERA, and 22 strikeouts to 6 walks in 25 innings. So regardless of this light up, I mean, maybe some people are going to cut bait on Julio Teheran. Relatively favorable matchup next week with Miami. You're still comfortable with Teheran? Like, these little blow ups aren't going to move you away from a good matchup like that?
Oh, I don't know that I would ever describe myself as comfortable with Teheran. I mean, it's got an XFIP over 5. But I am willing to, see the glass half full with him, because he has so consistently outperformed his XFIP in his career. And, you know, a lot of things contributing to that XFIP are a bloated walk rate, which seems like it's gotten better more recently. And the fact he hasn't given up many home runs despite being a fly ball pitcher, I think, has contributed to that, which, you know, maybe he's just good at preventing home runs. I don't know. I think if I had him in my roster, I wouldn't be dropping him based on this start. Like, any pitcher is susceptible to a bad start. And he only gave up 1 home run, so it's not like that was the issue. But yeah, I wouldn't say I'm comfortable with Teheran.
Okay. Let's kick back to the two starts. Let's just take a little look. I'm going to throw some out to you, see what your take is, if you like both the starts as two start guys, not just in the deep, deep ones, and then I see if you've got a couple other, if there were any others that shine out to you. A couple interesting ones. How about Cole Hamels? Cole Hamels, you know, he had that blow up the other day. He's got two starts, one at home against the San Francisco Giants and also at home against the Nationals, where he's lined up against Steven Strasburg. I mean, obviously his owner percentage is very high, 96, but start rate has only been 64. What do you think about Cole Hamels in both of those starts next week?
I do it. I try not to overthink these things because that's when you end up, you know, that's when you end up with the most regret, or at least I do. And it's a situation where, like, if it goes well for Cole Hamels, like, he's of a caliber where he could just carry your pitching staff that week, and you don't want to risk missing out on that.
Okay, what about a guy like Brendan McKay then? Brendan McKay has got the Mariners, and then he's at Baltimore. I think very favorable matchups for the most part. 83% owned right now, but he's been a little wishy-washy. Are you going to string him out for both those starts next week?
Yeah. And to be clear, I'm thinking more of a weekly lineup situation where you're wanting to maximize two start options. I mean, there's a good chance neither of them is a quality start, but because both of the matchups are so favorable, I expect the ratios to be good, and hopefully he can sneak a win out in one of them, you know? So yeah, I'd start him.
Chris Archer, 78% owned. He's got the Nationals and the Indians. They are both home games. Those are not great. Your boy Chris Archer, what do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's must start, but I'd probably start him. Certainly in a points league, I'd start him.
Would you not start the Nationals one and maybe start the Indians one if you had to pick between the starts? Or is that just not even an option? Just let him go out.
And Reds.
I'm sorry, I said Indians. Yeah, Reds. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you probably saw Trevor Bauer's name.
I was 100% looking at Trevor Bauer's name, and that's why I said it.
When we were talking about Yu Darvish earlier, I opened up the Rangers box score. I do that all the time for Yu Darvish.
I still have that too, because my very first time I ever saw him was out here in Arizona at spring training. It was a Rangers game, and I was just like mouth open, you know, just in awe of him. And I always think of him as a Ranger as well. So
yeah.
All right, but good with Archer. Any others? What about any others jump out to you on this list that of note? Hey, maybe, you know, even though the ownership percentage is solid, Kyle Gibson, you know, is that one 90%? He's up against the White Sox and the Tigers. That actually seems relatively solid.
Right. The matchups are so good. I think he's an automatic start, even though he's been kind of up and down. I mean, pretty much the highly owned guys deserve to be started, I think.
And we've talked a lot about the lower guys too. Haney, Eliezer, you know, a couple of those guys on the lower end that people might want to stream.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great week for two star pitchers. Like, half of the list for me is just, I don't want anything to do with them. But, you know, on the high end, I don't think there's any real dilemmas at the top.
Any massive concerns. A couple emails. You guys can send in those emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. From Chris from Salt River Fields. I look at this one and I'm like, is that me? Like, this sounds like I'm sending the email. I am Chris and I go to Salt River Fields. But Chris says, the Welsh will like this one. Scott, not so much. And this has to do with, I brought up in, I think, at the very first show about players just owning teams.
Oh, yeah.
So this is another one of those. And I love that you guys have followed the trend all week. Luis Gonzalez owned Greg Maddux in 123 at bats. Gonzo batted .325, slugged .618 with a .998 OPS. Gonzo hit more home runs, 10, than any other player versus Maddux. And Gonzo's career took off after he opened up his stance a la the Punisher. P.S.
Oh.
I like that. P.S. The Welsh is doing a good job on CBS. Longtime listener of both ITL and CBS. Thank you very much, Chris. I like that he threw in the open stance adjustment as well, just like Aquino. So does that one hit you home a little bit because of Maddux?
Yeah, it hurts. It hurts. Maddux had that. You know, there were a few players who hit Maddux pretty well Used to have a term for guys he couldn't get out. He called them hackers because they usually were impatient hitters. I mean, Tony Gwynn hit 415 off of him. And Tony Gwynn, great hitter he was. He wasn't known for being patient. Yeah, I could probably find a few more here. But Gonzo might be the biggest of all.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. All right, we'll burn through a couple more here. Brian from Madison says, Jordan Alvarez, I almost said Jordan, almost did it. I haven't talked about him in a couple days, but Jordan Alvarez or Bryce Harper, categories OPS league, Scott?
Alvarez, I'm not really having too many doubts about Alvarez these days. Probably going to regress some, but I mean, he looks like just a total stud.
Okay, I'm going to stick with Harper. I've always been a little bit off on Jordan Alvarez, and he's just going crazy, but I'm still a believer. Zach from Houston. Dear Nick, Schmidt, Winston, and Jess, welcome, Chris, to the podcast. Can't wait to hear your insight and unique personality going forward. As soon as I get this all down, that's probably when it'll come out, right? A lot of good stuff here. Do you have any concerns about Josh Hader? He has recently been giving up a lot of home runs, and the Brewers have given other guys save opportunities in his stead from time to time. And by the way, greeting answer characters from New Girl since Chris is new to the podcast. Okay. I would have had no idea. Never seen
that. You didn't watch New Girl?
No, never saw New Girl. So I would have never, ever
it's
had
good.
That.
Okay. It's good. I recommend it.
I'm in. Better than Euphoria, according to Adam Azer. So Hader, I think we've been concerned with Hader. We've been talking about that this week.
Yeah. Has Zach not been tuning in? I mean, we had a long conversation about Matt Albers yesterday.
Yeah, go back and listen. You're good. We're concerned.
Yeah, I don't even think it's so much the performance as just where what the Brewers want Hader doing. And they've never really... I was kind of surprised how often they turned to him for saves at the start of the year because it went against the way Craig Counsell has always talked about using him. And they seem to have fallen away from that. I think in terms of all the home runs allowed, that's just a location thing, and he'll eventually get that sorted out. But I am worried about him as a potential save source going forward.
Okay. From Greg, Adam, Chris, Scott, grade the trade head-to-head points league. Give Aaron Judge, Will Smith, and Miguel Sano. He says he has Gary Sanchez at catcher. Get Arenado, Voit, and Kluber. He says I should make the playoffs, which start in 3 weeks.
Will Smith, the catcher, he's giving up.
Will Smith. So it's essentially, if you wanted to cross-cancel Judge and Arenado, Voit and Smith, I mean, Kluber's the big second get he's getting here. And it's
I prefer Arenado, I think. I want to just cancel him out, comparing him and Judge. I think that might be a first-rounder versus a third-rounder there in my mind. I definitely prefer what he's getting, Arenado, Voit, especially Kluber. I mean, any chance you can get an ace-caliber pitcher without giving one up, assuming Kluber's going to be healthy here. So I will give it a strong grade. I'll give it an A-.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with the same grade. And even if, just for argument's sake, you canceled out Arenado and Judge, Kluber, you're going to do Kluber. You will take Kluber for Will Smith and Miguel Sano every day, all day, and you don't even need Voit. So that's A to A- for me. Two more real quick from Chris. Everyone's named Chris today. With Corey Kluber eyeing a return soon and his rehab start going so well, what do you think we can expect of him the rest of the way? I'm debating whether to put in some trade offers for him, and I'm wondering what you think it would make sense to offer and who some comparable pitchers might be the rest of the way for comparison purposes. So many comparisons, Scott. What do you think? What would you do with Kluber here as far as trading, if you're putting some offers out to trade for him?
Well, it'd be easier to get fully behind the idea of Kluber as an ace if his April had gone better, but I don't really put much stock into that either. I mean, he's old, and there were some underlying signs of some skills regression last year, so I think it's possible he's just not that's so good, and he's just not great anymore. He's not an ace anymore. But I don't think that's the most reasonable conclusion to draw from his April. So I think he's probably going to be a must-start option down the stretch. The kind of injury he's coming back from, a broken forearm, you know, it's not like something to his elbow, something to his shoulder. I think the way his rehab assignment's gone, you know, you don't really worry about the injury impacting who he is. So I forget what the specific question is.
I mean,
but
it was kind of all over the board. Like, how do you feel? But then also, I mean, it's getting a little bit more in depth. Like, what are some offer? Who are some comparable pitchers? I mean, you probably don't want to pay 100%. If you could pay 90 cents on the dollar of that type of a player, that's probably where you want to go, right?
Well, let me see where I moved him in my rest of season rankings, if I can pull that up quickly enough, because I just updated that on Tuesday and everything is freezing up on me. It's not loading fast enough, but I'm going to get there very soon. Just wait.
Would you offer Flaherty for Kluber?
I'd rather have Flaherty. So I have Flaherty 25th. I have Kluber 31st. And I could probably be talked into moving Kluber up to as high as like 27, 26. So right there behind Flaherty. I think that's probably a good range you picked there. So yeah, I have Sonny Gray 26th, Flaherty 25th, Zach Wheeler 24th. That is, you know, if you wanted to take a more optimistic stance with Kluber, that's about where I'd put him in my ranking.
Okay, so maybe the high is Wheeler. If you really wanted to, you know, be comfortable with Kluber and you really are in and all in, like maybe the high is you sell on Wheeler, even though you have him a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Okay. Last one was just a screenshot of Peeps cereal. And Azer said, you need to talk about this. So I don't know what this means. Outside of I did hear, this means two things in my world, and they both have to do with the Scots in my world. One is my buddy Scott Bogman having to eat Peeps until he got sick because he lost a bet. And the two is I heard that you dip Peeps in, is it coffee?
Tea.
Tea?
I just had some of that before the show, as I'm showing you now.
Would you have Peeps cereal?
I would. Yeah, okay. I'm down to try any cereal. My take on Peeps is, like, I've become known as this guy who loves Peeps. People like to send me all kinds of, like, oh, look, there's Peeps on pizza. Like, just anything Peep related, people send me because they think I'm a huge Peeps fan, which isn't true. I have a strong take on Peeps, though. And it's that I don't understand why everyone is so disgusted by Peeps. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's a sugar-covered marshmallow. It's a perfectly fine candy. It's not my favorite candy, but I'm not repulsed by it the way... And I don't even feel like it's legitimate. I feel like it's just one of those things where somebody famous acted totally grossed out about Peeps once upon a time, and then people who didn't really have a strong opinion about Peeps just sort of adopted that opinion, because that seems to be the way our culture works right now. And so it's become like this meme. Peeps are obviously icky when, I mean, their historical, their presence historically would suggest otherwise.
I think eating a Peep with some jelly beans is fine. Putting them on top of your pizza is atrocious.
Well,
yes. It's disgusting.
That is disgusting. Yeah. That's just an example.
You want to put it in your tea, then it's totally fine. It's all good. We're not judging here over on Fantasy Baseball Today, but that's all we got. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week right here, Fantasy Baseball Today.